find it interesting to look at different leagues and see like how they assess player value. Like in Major League Baseball, you can get an all-star caliber player for, I mean, like Rafael Devers, for a guy in Jordan Hicks, who is a reliever turned starting pitcher and has kind of been shaky as a starter, and three prospects. You know, in the NFL, you can get a Pro Bowl caliber or an all-pro caliber player for nothing, it seems like, anymore. I mean, Joe Tooney was traded away for a fifth-round pick. You know, I mean... DK Metcalf for a third. Legarius Sneed for a fifth that turned into a fourth. The value for a big-time player in different leagues is astonishing. But the one that makes the least amount of sense to me is in the NBA. Because you can trade away a big-time player for a team's entire future, seemingly. Look at what the Oklahoma City Thunder got for Russ. Look at what they got for Paul George and how that's panned out for him. I mean, the Thunder got like four first-round picks and SGA out of the Los Angeles Clippers in that trade. That worked out pretty well for them. They got a ton of picks from the Rockets for Russell Westbrook. I say all of this to try to wrap my mind around this trade that dropped yesterday morning. The Memphis Grizzlies traded guard Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic for a total of two players and five picks. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I don't know why he was a part of this move, to be honest with you. I don't know how KCP has hung around as long as he has. I really don't. I mean, he has hung around this league for a long... He averaged 8 points a game last year. And KCP is a good NBA player. He has had some really good years. But, I mean, he's a career 11-point-per-game guy. I think most of what KCP brings is availability. The guy can play. He is healthy night in and night out. The fewest number of games he's played in his career is 67. And he's been in the league since 2013. 80, 82, 76, 76, 74, 82, 69, 67, 77, 76, 76, 77. KCP is ready to suit it up. He's ready to lace him up and go. Every single night he's out there. So maybe I should give KCP a little bit more credit. They also, the Magic traded away Cole Anthony, a former top pick who has had an up and down start to his career. He's dealt with some injuries and hasn't really panned out the way that many were hoping from him. And he's coming off of statistically the worst year of his career. He played in 67 games. He only averaged 9 points a game, 3 rebounds, less than 3 assists, and shot 42% from the floor. So that's not great. But the biggest side of this is that the Grizzlies received 4 unprotected first-round picks and a pick swap from the Orlando Magic on Sunday for Desmond Bane. 2 players and 5 total first-round picks for Desmond Bane. And I'm not trying to disparage Desmond Bane, because Desmond Bane is a good player. He is a good NBA player. Last year with Memphis, he averaged 19-6-5. But he's never made an all-star game. He wasn't inside the top 30 in the NBA in points or rebounds or assists or field goal percentage. And you traded 5 picks and 2 players for him? For an Orlando Magic team that only won 41 games last year? I don't see it, man. I really don't. Somebody in the text line said that the Magic will be a factor if they're healthy. I don't think so. I'm sorry. The Cleveland Cavaliers aren't going anywhere. The Boston Celtics, yeah, they're going to be on the struggle bus maybe a little bit next year because of the Jason Tatum injury. But I don't see the Indiana Pacers going anywhere. The New York Knicks aren't going anywhere. So what? The Magic just made themselves a contender for the fifth best record in the Eastern Conference? Whoop-de-friggin-do. Desmond Bane does not take the Magic and from a team that is a playoff contender to a championship contender, or even a contender in the Eastern Conference. There are still four or five teams in the East, the ones I just mentioned, that I can easily point to and say those teams are still better than the Orlando Magic. Desmond Bane is a good scorer. He's a great three-point shooter. He adds scoring depth at the guard position, which is where they struggle. I just don't see it, dude. I don't understand where they're going with this. And it adds further conversation about, well, good God, what are some of these other NBA guys going to be worth? What is their trade value now? What is Kevin Durant's trade value now? Because anybody who says that Desmond Bane has more trade value than Kevin Durant is either not paying attention or is just a Kevin Durant hater. Yes, I know that KD is a little bit older now, right? I mean, he's 36, he'll be 37 next season, and Desmond Bane's 26, 27. But in 62 games last year for Phoenix, KD averaged 26, 6, and 4. And was nearly a 50-40-90 guy. Shot 53% from the floor, he shot 43% from the three-point line, and shot 84% from the free throw line. So if Desmond Bane is worth two players and five firsts, what the hell is Kevin Durant worth? I have such a hard time understanding player value in the NBA. It almost doesn't make sense to me. I mean, look, like Steven Adams signed a free agent deal with Houston earlier in the weekend. Also, 3 years, $39 million. $13 million a year for a guy who averaged 4 points a game and five rebounds. That's worth $13 million a year.
Don't be hating on Steven Adams. He's a great glue guy. And brings a very, very good defensive presence to that and veteran presence to the Rockets team.
He averaged half a block and less than half a steal. What defensive presence is 32-year-old Steven Adams, who only started three games and played 13 minutes a night for the Rockets? What exactly? Point it out to me. What tangible piece of evidence can you point to that justifies Steven Adams being worth $13 million a year to your organization?
He sets very hard screens.
Yeah, he does. That's great. Not worth $13 million a year. I hate to say.
Do you want to know a cool stat about Steven Adams, though?
Let me hear it.
So he has never once hit the free agency market. He has been on, what is it, four teams now? He has never once tested the free agency market. He has re-signed with every team that he has been on.
That's an interesting stat. I did not know that. But the whole thing will never make sense to me. None of it. None of the NBA makes sense to me after the Los Angeles Lakers gave Timofey Mozgov 4 years for 64. I think that was the moment where the NBA was like Pandora's box was opened and value meant nothing to anybody anymore. Like Timofey Mozgov, his last year in Cleveland, averaged 6 points and four rebounds a game in 17 minutes. And the Lakers said, yeah, we want to give that guy $16 million a year. What did he do? He averaged 7 and 5 in 1 year with the Lakers, and then ended up going to Brooklyn, where he averaged 4 and 3, and then never played in the NBA again. But somehow the Lakers thought $64 million over 4 years sounds great, Timofey Mozgov. Let's make that happen. Player value in the NBA makes absolutely no sense. And you do raise a good point. There's people in the text line talking about it. Draft picks in the NBA are incredibly hit or miss. No question about it. That with any pick, it's hit or miss, right? And in the NFL, right, a third or a fourth round pick, that's still a guy that can affect the bottom line of your roster. With 53 guys on a team, that can really, really matter. But if you're smart about your picks, you can really make something out of it. I mean, Oklahoma City is the prime example of using your draft picks and using your capital to make things happen. I mean, in some of these trades, they have done some really, really astonishing things. You know, they used these picks to go get a plethora of different guys, right? They drafted Josh Giddey, who they ended up trading away and using him for some value. They drafted Alperen Şengün, and he ended up going to Houston, and that ended up being a good value thing for them. They got Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams in the same draft. They got Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, and Jalen Williams. They got both of them and Chet Holmgren in the same draft class by utilizing some of these added picks. Right? They got Derek Lively, who they ended up trading to Dallas. They picked up Nikola Topić in this last year's draft. They have used that value and created some really, really outstanding teams, right? They're two games away from possibly winning an NBA Finals right now. But man, I don't know with how much the Grizzlies got back for a guy like Desmond Bain, what is a guy like Kevin Durant going to be worth? And I know KD's a little bit of a headache and he's got his own set of problems that come with him, but the guy is a proven winner. He's won multiple championships. He's one of, in my opinion, the top three best pure scorers in the history of basketball. What he does at his size at all three levels, not many guys have ever done that, or have ever been able to do that. Kevin Durant is a special, special talent. I think some general manager out there might have to give up their firstborn. And I don't know. An owner might have to give up majority ownership of the team to whatever organization they trade Kevin Durant to. Or they get... Yeah, Phoenix is going to walk away owning a second NBA team. That seems to be the value for Kevin Durant. It's insane to me. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll talk a little bit more about the NBA as we go along. Of course, Game 5 of the NBA Finals begins here in about 15 minutes. So that one's going to be a lot of fun. I'm still of the belief that the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to win this series until they don't. I can't get it out of my head that Oklahoma City is the better team. KD needed Steph to get those rings, though. I knew that was coming. I knew it was coming eventually, but yeah, fair. Still won him, though. He's a Finals MVP. Still a 30-point-per-game guy. Still average. Still scoring 27 a night. He's old, though. I wouldn't give up more than two first-round picks. I wouldn't have given up two first-round picks for Desmond Bain. But Desmond Bain was worth five, apparently, and two players. So I don't think there's any planet in which Kevin Durant is only worth two first-round picks. I'm sorry. I just don't think there's any way. Somebody out there is going to load the Brinks truck full of picks and players for somebody like Kevin Durant. Somebody else in the text line says, you got to build around Paolo, show him you want to win so he'll stick around when free agency hits. Not the worst idea I've heard, right? Banchero is one of the best young players in the league, and they've got some really good pieces, right? They got Jalen Suggs, who is coming off of the best year of his young NBA career after averaging 17 a game, but Jalen Suggs' problem is he can't stay healthy. So a backcourt pairing of Desmond Bain and Jalen Suggs, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But he's got to stay healthy. You got Franz Wagner, and you've now got Desmond Bane to go along with these guys. It makes some sense for the Magic. I just don't think that this puts them over the top of any of those other four or five contending teams in the East. I don't think this makes them better than the Pacers, the Knicks, the Celtics, or the Cavaliers. And, you know, as good as Detroit was this year, I think they have opportunities to build. They've got a really young roster. They've got some salary cap at their disposal and some things that they can do to try to improve themselves even further. The Magic only won 41 games last year. Yes, I know that they were injured, but I'm not confident that that's just going to go away. I think those injury issues, they kind of ebb and flow. Desmond Bane takes you, if the Magic were a 41-win team last year, Desmond Bane gives you 44 or 45 wins. Eh. I got an 816 that asks, is it 5 first-round picks or with some swaps? So 4 of them are unprotected first-round picks. And then 1 of them is a pick swap. So 4 of the 5 are just first-round picks. And then you've got the 1 pick swap, which I don't know exactly what year that pick swap is, but man, I don't know. The trade value in the NBA is hard to wrap my head around. Really, really hard to wrap my head around. After hours here on 96.5, the Fan, Logan Weber here with you. We've got Jacob Mustard alongside. We've got some stories surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs that I want to talk about here, as well as big news in the state of Missouri in regards to the Chiefs and Royals and their proposed stadium plans. We'll talk about that next here on 96.5, the Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Big news if you're in the state of Missouri. The special session that occurred a couple of weeks ago talking about the stadium plans for both the Chiefs and the Royals, and it got through the House, it got through the Senate, and today Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe signed the stadium aid package for both the Chiefs and the Royals, including hundreds of millions of dollars from the state in financial aid, which is intended to persuade both teams to remain in Missouri rather than go to Kansas. So where do we go from here, right? The lease for both teams in Jackson County out at the Truman Sports Complex is up in January of 2031. So both teams will need to have a home in place by 2032. For the Royals, it's not going to be Kauffman Stadium. That is well documented at this point. They do not want to return to Kauffman Stadium. It is one of the top 5 oldest ballparks in baseball. The only ones older are like Dodger Stadium, Wrigley, and Fenway. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. They're not going to go back to Kauffman. All right, Kauffman's got its own fair shares of issues, whether it's foundational or otherwise. They're not going back to the complex. The Chiefs have expressed interest in going back to Arrowhead, but we know that Chiefs owner Clark Hunt has been very upfront and public with his, I don't want to say desire necessarily, but interest in a possible domed stadium. So the next step here is decision time for these two organizations. The Chiefs are discussing a possible $1.15 billion renovation of Arrowhead Stadium. The Royals have always insisted upon building a replacement, whether that be downtown or in the commercial district or possibly even over in Kansas. Speaking of Kansas, their offer expires on June 30th. Which means we could very well see an official decision for both the Chiefs and the Royals come down in the next 2 weeks. With that offer from Kansas expiring here at the end of the month, Missouri legislation authorizes bonds that would cover up to 50% of the cost of new or renovated stadium, plus up to $50 million of tax credits for each stadium and an unspecified aid from local governments. That's on the Missouri side. Kansas has the bonds, the Star Bonds, which could cover up to 70% of the cost of brand new stadiums in their state. Right, the Royals are floating a possible $2 billion ballpark district in downtown. What the cost would be over on the Kansas side, I have no idea. But I think it's fair to say that a new stadium in Kansas would justify close to or over $1 billion via those Star Bonds. I'm done making predictions and prognostications on this thing, because a month ago, I didn't think there was any way in hell that those two teams were going to stay in Missouri. I thought both the Chiefs and Royals were going to go to Kansas. I really did. I didn't think there was any way in the world that people in the state of, you know, politicians in the state of Missouri could come together and make a decision of this magnitude for Kansas City. Like, I couldn't picture folks from St. Louis and Cape Girardeau and in southwest Missouri, like down in the Springfield area and up north in the northeast part of the state. I couldn't picture folks from Jefferson City and St. Louis agreeing on putting money up to keep the Chiefs and the Royals in Kansas City. But surprisingly, that's what we saw. Now, it was interesting that they kind of tied in disaster relief statewide into the stadium funding. So that brought in a lot of people who were in support of the disaster relief when that tornado hit St. Louis about exactly a month ago today, May 16th. So in voting for one, you had to vote for the other because they were attached in the bill. I don't know, man. I don't know what happens from here. But I think we're going to find out here very shortly with that the Star Bond issue in Kansas expiring on June 30th. Barring them just having, you know, coming together and putting a postponement of that or pushing back the deadline or what have you. They'll probably extend it, would be my guess. But then again, I don't know, because it's going to take 5 or 6 years to put a new stadium together between the funding and the permits and just the actual manual labor that it will require for a new stadium, which the Royals have already said they want. The Royals are getting a new stadium. So you're either building a brand new stadium and renovations on an existing one, or you're going to have to build two brand new stadiums at the same time. If they push the extension back beyond June 30th, I can't imagine it's going to be pushed any further back than maybe the end of July, because you're going to need 5 or 6 years to put all of it together before that lease expires in 2031. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen quickly. 913-586-7965 is our number. Dan in KCK says, "Hi, Logan. Royals will come out of it." I hope so. I agree with you. He says, "The Thunder in six. I'm not a Knicks fan, but I think it will be Mike Brown that they end up hiring to take over." I don't know what the Knicks are doing. I mean, I understand the firing of Tom Thibodeau, but you're just going after a bunch of already solidified coaches, college or NBA guys, and trying to steal them from other jobs. It's a really hard thing to do. Ask the Los Angeles Lakers, who tried to poach Dan Hurley. That didn't work out very well for him. Although I think it did, because they got a really good coach in J.J. Redick, in my opinion. I got an 816 here. Says Kansas is just puffing their chest out. They will extend that star. They will extend the Star Bond issue if the Chiefs send them a drunk text at 3 a.m. on the 29th. Very well could. I don't know, man. But I'm glad to see that we're potentially coming to the finish line of this whole thing. This has been years and years of constant debate and whatever else. And I just want to know where my teams are going to be, dude. I don't care anymore. 10 years ago, yeah, I would have cared so much about where the Chiefs and the Royals were going to play. I would have been so upset as a native of Missouri if they had gone to the Kansas side. But I've grown up, and I realize the business of sport a little bit more, and you look around and you see Nashville very interested in a Major League Baseball team, and Salt Lake's very interested in a Major League Baseball team, and we know the appeal of trying to go south for a Major League Baseball team. Big cities like Jacksonville or San Antonio and places like that that don't have teams right now but could very well be interested in one. Just wanted to stay here, man. I don't care if they're playing in Lenexa or Overland Park or friggin' Westport. I don't care. I just want them to be in the Metro. I want to be able to go watch the Chiefs and Royals. I want to continue to hear them be called the Kansas City Chiefs and the Kansas City Royals. It does not matter to me anymore if they are in Kansas City, Missouri, or Kansas City, Kansas, or if they are in a suburb of these two cities. Doesn't matter to me. 913-586-7965 is our number. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports. Game 5 of the NBA Finals between the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder expected to tip off momentarily. Game 5 tonight is at the Paycom Center in Oklahoma City. So far, it hasn't really mattered who the home team is. Both teams are 1-1 in road versus home games. Pacers beat Oklahoma City in game one in OKC. The Thunder then won game two at home. Pacers won game three at home. And then the Thunder beat Indiana in Indiana in game four. I find it so interesting that the NBA does this format. I think it's the safest way to ensure home court advantage for whoever has home court advantage, doing the 2-2-1-1-1 kind of format versus like a 2-3-2 format. I would even say, like, what could you do, like a 1-1-1-2-2 style? I don't know what the best situation calls for, but game five will be in Oklahoma City. Game six will be in Indianapolis, and then game seven, if necessary, goes back to OKC. I said earlier in the show that I still believe Oklahoma City is the better team. And I still think Oklahoma City wins. But I think that this thing is shaping up to be a 7-game series. I cannot ignore the way that the Pacers have been able to keep themselves in these games. Because I think Oklahoma City is the better basketball team. I think that's obvious for anybody who pays attention to basketball. But this Indiana Pacers team, they just have something about them. I don't know what it is.
It's the power of friendship.
It's something. I don't know if it's the power of friendship. I don't know if Tyrese Halliburton's made a deal with the devil. I have no idea what's going on. But this Pacers team, it has a similar feeling, or I hate to use the word aura, because that word gets thrown around so much nowadays and it means nothing anymore. In fact, it doesn't even have its initial meaning. It's just a meme nowadays, which is so annoying. But either way, the feeling that I get with this Indiana Pacers team is kind of the feeling that I get that I got when I watched the Dallas Mavericks in 2011. That year would have been with Dirk and Jason Terry and Sean Mary. It was just like J.J. Barea. It was just this weird older roster that you didn't expect to get there, and they got there and they won it, and you're like, holy hell, like, didn't expect a team with a 38-year-old Dirk Nowitzki to be hoisting up the Larry O'Brien. they remind me a little bit of like that 2014 Spurs team, right? You had an aging Tim Duncan. You had an aging Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, guys who were well past their prime. You had a young, emerging Kawhi Leonard. And then just this group of role players that just became household names overnight, right? Like, I'd never heard of Patty Mills before that NBA playoffs. Patty Mills became a guy everybody knew, right? This Aussie guard and all the different things. And Danny Green became known as one of the best bench players in basketball after that. It probably extended his career by another 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, this team doesn't have the MVP, obviously, right? The level of star power, quote unquote, with the Pacers maybe isn't the same as what the Thunder have. But this Pacers team, dude, they just have, I don't know what it, I don't, it's not a tangible thing that I can point. They just, they never quit. They never say die. They're like, I don't care if we're down 40 in the, or 20 in the fourth quarter. Doesn't matter to me. Oh, we're down 30 at halftime. We got plenty of time to figure it out. Let's just, you know, let's just stack it together, right? I think that sometimes with certain teams, I look at, I don't know what the, you see teams when they get down, right? They get down 15 or 20 in the beginning of the fourth quarter of a game, or they're down 12 with 4 minutes to go. And sometimes you just see it on the face of a team that they're like, yeah, okay, I think we're out of it. And or they try to get back into a game by taking these mammoth swings. They start chucking threes from all over the place, and their defense suddenly gets so much more aggressive and physical, and that leads to foul trouble and all the different things. I look at this Pacers team, and I think they've got the right approach to, they've got the right approach to when they get down late in a game. Hey, we're not going to win with a haymaker here, right? There's no knockout punch here. We just have to jab our way back into this basketball game. It's not trying to force the issue. It's passing up the good look for the great look. It's let Tyrese Halliburton find guys with his dribble drive and his inside out game, and get Pascal Siakam involved. Try to get to the rim. You know, it's they have a responsible approach when they get down late in these games, and they never seem to be uncomfortable in those moments. They're fun to watch, dude. They
really remind me of the Miami Heat from the bubble with Jimmy Butler Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero before he kind of really broke out. I know that was his breakout season, and you know, just they had a bunch of well-versed, well-rounded players, and it just collectively, now ultimately they didn't win, and who knows what this team does. But it's a fun watch, like you said, and they're up 7-4 right now.
It just seems it's a team, in my view, that accepts their roles and accepts them really, really well, right? I mean, a guy like Benedict Mathurin, who was a top 10 pick, he's been a great player. I mean, Benedict Mathurin, for people who aren't paying close, the guy's a 16-point-per-game scorer for his career. But he's not a starter, right? He started 49 games for the Pacers this year, but he hasn't started over the course of this playoff run. There were 23 games this year in Indiana he didn't start. He only started in 19 games last year and only started 17 games in his rookie season, despite averaging 16, 14.5, and 16 again. He's a really consistent scorer. And for a guy of that caliber, you're like, I'm scoring 16 a game and I'm not even playing 30 minutes a night. Like, I should be playing 38 minutes a night. I should be shooting the ball 15, 16 times. I should be averaging 20 a game. You don't see that from him a lot, right? You don't see guys getting upset when Tyrese Halliburton is very ball dominant at the point guard position. Number one, because they trust what he provides as a point guard. And two, they know what he brings to the table. They allow Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton to be the leaders and the scoring buoys for this team, right? Guys like Andrew Nimhard, guys like I just mentioned
Miles Turner,
Benedict Mathurin, right? These guys could certainly have that type of ego, right? Aaron Nesmith could have an ego with how good of a shooter he is and be like, yo, why am I not getting, I'm not getting enough touches every game. Why, I'm Obi Toppin. You know, I'm one of the most exciting two-way guys in the league. Why am I not getting any touches?
Also, to make you kind of feel old, Mathurin, born in 2002.
That's young.
June 19th, so his birthday is coming up. It'll be, is that going to be just after, just before the next game?
Yeah, somewhere in between there, I think. Yeah, wild to me. But it's fun, dude. I think it's a great series. And I know that there's, Thunder, Pacers, who gives? If you're a basketball fan, you should. But I digress. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line, we'll go a little long here. Somebody in the text line said, Logan, I'm listening behind, but to say that this would be 23 without Q is a bad take. Would you let a sleeping man drive you around? Why does it appear that, were you making the insinuation that Matt Quatrero is asleep at the wheel? Because I don't think that's what's happening. They have a top 10 pitching staff in baseball, top to bottom, at least in terms of team ERA. They're in the top half of baseball in batting average. They're struggling with runners in scoring position. And their pitching is having its worst month of the year by a ridiculous amount. They've got an ERA of almost 4.7 this month when they had an ERA in May of 3.12. So they're having their worst pitching month of the year, and they can't hit with runners in scoring position. Matt Quatrero was a huge part. Him and J.J. Piccolo as a duo were a big part of the year-over-year turnaround from 56 to 86 wins. I don't think Matt Quatrero is asleep at the wheel. He's not Ned Yost. Matt Quatrero, that's not his personality. He is not the run out onto the field and get yourself ejected from it. That's not who Matt Quatrero is. And I don't think he has to be that guy. The players on this team believe in him. They believe in what he has to say. And I think we should too. I think he's earned that. After the year that they had last year, he's earned the benefit of the doubt to some extent. 913-586-7965. We'll come back and wrap up hour number two. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight, so stick around. This is After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan. Thunder out to an early lead about halfway through the first quarter. Oklahoma City leads 22-12. Trio of guys leading the way, no surprise, in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren. SGA with 7. He's already attempted 3 free throws, and we're not even halfway through the first quarter. Surprise, surprise. Jalen Williams has got 6. Chet Holmgren with 5. Alex Caruso, the only guy off the bench so far for OKC. Obi Toppin and Ben Shepherd just checked in for Indiana. We'll see what happens. This is a big one in this series, obviously. But to take game 5, if you're Oklahoma City, you guarantee yourself a game 7 at home, right? For Indiana, you win this and you've not only secured yourself a possible game 7 opportunity, but it puts so much pressure on Oklahoma City then in game 6 to have to go on the road to force said game 7, right? This is a big series no matter how you shake it, as Oklahoma City leads it early by 8. 913-586-7965. Somebody in the text line, somebody brought this stat up earlier. But somebody else bringing it up here again. There's one player on the Rockies that has hit as many home runs in the K as anybody on the Royals have this year. There's an issue with the approach, and it's coming from Zumwalt. He preaches line drives and getting on, and that doesn't work when you have a top-heavy lineup. If the team is batting 250, that means 1 through 4 are getting on, and that's not enough to play base for base. The average will look great, but when it's sacrificing power, it is a fatal flaw. Everyone at the station was saying it wasn't Cal Eldred, and sure as bleep, as soon as Cal Eldred left, the pitching department is on fire. Zumwalt was a triple-A pitcher, and I want him as far away from these young hitters as possible. Okay. I think that that's a, I agree with some of what you're saying, and I disagree with some of what you're saying. Yes, the power numbers are a dumpster fire. They are an absolute joke. Yeah, that player for the Rockies, I couldn't tell you his name, in like nine at-bats, nine plate appearances at Kauffman, hit three home runs. There is not one player on the Royals that has three home runs at Kauffman this year. That's problematic. The power numbers are concerning, obviously. You know, Jack Caglione hasn't hit a home run yet since he came up. That's sort of been his calling card. I think that's a big part of why the Royals made the move for him. Bobby's power numbers are down. Salvi's power numbers are down. I'm not sitting here, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I did see in a tweet from Andrew McCutchen over the weekend that like some MLB official admitted that the baseballs are different this year somehow, and like because of that, power numbers are down across the league. Doesn't matter. I mean, that does not justify the Royals having 15 fewer home runs than the Colorado Rockies this year. That doesn't justify there being five teams in Major League Baseball with twice as many or more home runs than Kansas City does. But I guess the baseballs are a little bit different. Obviously, Kauffman's one of the toughest ballparks to hit a ball out of in all of Major League Baseball. But when you look up and down this lineup, nobody seems to be hitting home runs. Not Bobby, not Salvi, not Vinny, not Cag since he got the call. It's problematic. It's tough. But I don't know how much of that, I mean, Zumwalt is, he's coaching to the best of his ability. And playing in a ballpark like Kauffman Stadium, line drives and getting on base is how you win games. That's how the 85 Royals won. That's how the 15 Royals won. They weren't big home run hitting baseball teams either. They drove the ball in the gaps. They got on base. They utilized speed and great defense behind great pitching, and that's how they won games. But that's a system where if one's not working, it's really hard for the others to pick it up. And right now, I just think that's what we're seeing. The Royals are in the midst of their worst stretch of the year, and it's not even particularly close. But I think it's way too early to hit the panic button. It's way too early to be talking about firing people. 913-586-7965 is our number. Take a break. We'll come back. Third and final hour of our show tonight here on After Hours. Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard alongside producing on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.